I have a most interesting subject to discuss with you this morning. This is the Senior Minister of our Lord and Savior. When we were children in Sabbath school.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Fundamentalists Podcast. This is a podcast brought to you by myself, Elliot Morgan, stand-up and internet comedian, as well as...
Peter Rollins, the person who sells existential despair for money and alcohol.
Yeah, and how's that going?
Yeah, you know, it's all right. You'd think that nobody would want
it. You wouldn't think it would be, but...
I'm still sharing a flat with you, so it's not going that great.
Yeah, tell me about it, man. I'm so sorry. You've fallen on hard times. Yeah. Well, yeah, everybody, this is a podcast where we try to talk about how to live well in the world and how to have a good time and dive into subjects that are, I don't know, heady, maybe?
Yeah, a bit of philosophy, a bit of psychoanalysis.
Did maybe you just have a Freudian slip with the word psychoanalysis?
I did. I don't know what that means. Yeah.
What did you? Yeah, I think you just stumbled.
I stumbled.
Yeah, that would have been great, though.
Yeah.
We can redo it. So, what are we talking about today, Pete?
Oh, yeah. Well, you came up with a subject, which I think is very, very good. Basically, how not to be a dick.
Yeah.
No, or was that wrong?
Well, that was pretty much it.
No, you had a nicer way of saying it, like a non-judgmental way of saying
it. The art of dickishness is what my phrase was. But that's only because I just wanted a subject where I was the expert in it.
Instead of,
so I'm like, this
you've got this down to a fine art.
Yeah.
Now, I've seen you out.
Yeah, exactly. You've seen me in public.
I've seen your YouTube videos.
Elliot's not likable. It's
a great how you've used that to be likable. Likableness is kind of likable.
Yeah.
It really is, actually. We often are really drawn to people who aren't likable.
That's my goal, man. But it's definitely not the least polarizing brand I could have gone with. It's weird because I don't feel like I'm super cynical, but then we're going to dive into all this fun stuff because it's fast. There's so many directions we can have with this one. But do you ever feel like you are a dick? Like, do you feel like the dick in scenarios sometimes?
Yeah, you know, I play poker, and in poker they say if you can't see the fish around the table, you are the fish. And maybe I was going to say, like, you know, sometimes if you can't see the dick in the room, then you are it.
Yeah.
And I suppose sometimes I'm looking around, not seeing the dick in the room, and I probably am.
Now, all these people are so nice and easygoing.
Yeah. Why is no one talking to me?
Yeah. That's like a very common stand-up joke that was being done for like 10 years where people would be like, you know, there's the girl at the party who da-da-da-da-da, and then go off on some joke, and then the stand-up at the end of the joke would inevitably be like, and if you don't know who I'm talking about, then that person's you. And it was, and I think I did some version of that at one point, trying to make fun of the fact that it was such a comic joke. But yeah, so do you feel like sometimes maybe
I guess so, but the problem is, which brings us in, you know, into the heart of the theory, and by the way, you're still sick.
I know, man, it's crazy.
You've been sick for ages.
Yeah, it's and I got it, I think, from my brother and sister-in-law, and they were like, it lasts a month and it's just keeps on going. I'm feeling a lot better now.
Yeah.
And every day I'm like, maybe it's gone. And then I just have this like phlegmy, mucousy, gross thing.
But every morning I still have to bring you breakfast in bed. You still say you can't get up.
Rules are rules.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. What I was going to say is, it's very hard for us sometimes to know when we're being an asshole. We're kind of like protect ourselves from our own self-knowledge. I mean, that's why reality TV works, because nobody thinks they're a dick.
Yeah.
If people knew what they were like, they wouldn't go on live TV. But often, you know, the people who go on live TV, they're on live TV thinking, oh, everyone's going to love me. I'm such a great person. And it's only when they see themselves on the television that they actually see that they're not the most likable person in the world.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's a fun metaphor, analogy.
Yeah. I mean, that's the issue as well. A lot of people who go on to live TV stuff are inherently... have an inability to see themselves.
You just keep getting closer and closer to like, and then like a lot of people who do internet hosting and YouTube videos, you know, like they think that, you know, actors, comedians, all of them. I feel like very often in recent times I've realized just in like, I'll take a step back. Really, I think I was going through stuff with just business stuff with the Valley Folk thing, and it becomes this thing where, like, we have a text thread and we have all these things, and I just kind of, like, I think I've stopped. I guess we should maybe clarify what we mean by dick and dickishness and that for a second without getting too into the weeds, because in my mind there's being a dick, and then there's not being nice, and that's a whole other thing that sometimes gets grouped in to being a dick, and the two get kind of muddled, and it's like there's that thing where it's like, well, just because you're not nice doesn't mean you're being mean or rude or anything.
Well, see, this is not a distinction that we did in philosophy class, so I think I'm going to learn from you here, because you have a better understanding of the distinction between dickishness, assholeness, and whatever,
and just not
things.
Being nice. Yeah. Let me take it from here, Pete.
Aristotle definitely didn't cover it.
Turn to page. It's definitely a distinction solely in my head that might just make me feel better about my behavior. Mm-hmm. But I think that there is some. It's like, because growing up in the South, politeness and like overt politeness and all that is like seen as definitely like a virtue, but also sometimes just like a necessity. And if you're not those things, then you're a jerk in some way. And then if you are a jerk, that must mean you're a bad person. And like, if you're a bad person, then you are, you know, anything you say is garbage. But so I've always, like, now I'm having to go back, and a lot of times with exchanges, I'll be like, oh, that was, if I didn't like know me, I would think I was kind of like a jerk sometimes, because the language I use, especially in texting, is very just like cut and dry, and I don't use a lot of emojis. I definitely throw in smiley faces at the end so people know that I'd be like nice or whatever, but I look at them like objectively, I'm like, well, there's a good chance that, you know, that kind of sounds like nice, but then it's not that. So I guess how would you define like a dick, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, well, you see, I'll give it a try, but I think you're going to have more insight into this, because when you said the idea, I mean, I was thinking about behavior that is designed to, or, you know, whether consciously or unconsciously, to annoy, frustrate the people around you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I thought, and most of it's unconscious, so we don't even know we're doing it, but it's behavior that is like, and I say designed to, because, you know, we all forgive each other for a little bit of a, you know, when we don't write the nicest text for a second, but kind of like with stuff that people repeat. You know, that people, little repetitive nastiness, nasty things that people do.
Yeah.
That's part of, are part of their personality. That's what I think of as dickishness.
Yep. I think you nailed it.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I think I think that would be what we mean by that term.
Yeah.
And not like any kind of, I don't know, but I guess
it's the difference between, say, somebody being late once or twice because of traffic or whatever, and then someone who is late every single time, and they've always got a legitimate excuse, and every excuse on its own sounds viable, but when you put them all together and you go, oh, this is 20 different excuses, you go, that's dickish behavior.
Yeah.
So it's not being late once or twice, but it's the repetitive nature that's something the person does.
Yeah, it's like if you start to get a message from somebody after a while that like something else is being conveyed for late people. Mike Birbiglia has a great bit about like being an on time person versus a late person in the special Thank God for Jokes currently streaming on Netflix. But he talks about like what late people don't understand about on time people is that we hate you.
Yeah.
And it's like, but it's also just like, he kind of breaks down what it's like when you are an on time person and then a late person shows up, because it is that person in some way being like, well, my time is, you know, more valuable and I'm going to do what I want to do. And that can be a very frustrating thing. So that's a dickish behavior.
And yet I suppose some people, cause I know some people who are late all the time, but it's kind of endearing and you don't feel it's designed to be nasty. It's not something that feels like it's trying to cajole or bring tension. And so even lateness, you have to take a case by case basis here. Someone's dickish behavior is another person's, like, is fine.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's 100%. It's all context and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
So we were talking briefly about before we got started recording. First of all, is there anything, we're supposed to do like announcements or something? Do you have anything you want to plug?
No, I'm good.
Yeah. So new to this, you know, it's only I don't know how to, I'm like, oh, we're housekeeping. And then I just like derail the conversation to boring announcements. we're talking about the mirror phase. Let's dive into that for a second. What's that?
Yeah. Well, we weren't talking about it. We were talking about it before we went live.
Yes.
In case anybody's like, well, did I miss that?
Yes.
No, we
that's a fun, that's a dickish behavior just to mess with people. So of course you were mentioning the mirror phase. Go on. why is it scrubbing back?
Oh, here. Can I mention actually a good example? Well, no, we'll come back to that. Mirror phase.
Yeah. Hold that thought.
Yeah. Because I've got a good example, I think, of a friend who did some dickish behavior. And then we can delve into the reasons why he did it.
I definitely want to do that. We can do that now.
Oh yeah, we'll do it. And I'll just tell you, like, you know, great guy. He went through a difficult divorce, and he was in a lot of pain.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah. I'll think of a name. Let's call him Belliot.
Yeah, something normal. What's a normal name? Like Belly, like Belliot Schmorgan.
Yeah. No, so my friend was, he has two kids. He loves them very dearly. And he would, every Thursday night, go around and read them stories because they lived with their mother. They were there on a Tuesday night and before they went to bed.
Yeah.
But one week he forgot to do. He was very stressed, loads of things at work. So he completely forgot. He felt terrible about it. Then he did it the second week again. And again, he looked and he was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I did this. I'm so under stress. And then what was incredible is he did it 3 weeks in a row. And his partner, his ex-partner said to him, why are you doing this? Do you want your kids to hate you? And my friend's very smart and he had a moment of self-awareness and he was like, oh, maybe I do want my kids to hate me. Because he had so much self-loathing and guilt in him, but he repressed it by always partying, getting drunk, going out. That weirdly, what seemed to be happening is he was repeating a behavior that was dickish, that was hurting other people, and it was kind of designed to. But the weird thing is, it seemed like he was doing that behavior so that his kids would feel about him the way that he feels about himself.
Right. Well, you would want your kids to kind of like have the like, you know, just like a parent wants a kid to be the same profession that they are in some way or be into what they're into because they want to see themselves in their kids. So that would make sense, I guess, if you're like, if you're hating yourself and you're, then you'd be like, well, I want my kids to hate me too because that makes them more like me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that could be it. I said, well, or just you want the external world to reflect your self-hatred or whatever. Yeah, weird stuff goes on.
Dude, I remember many actions I took that were just like self-sabotage during my divorce and separation where it was just like, please, just like every action I took would paint me negatively in some way because I felt like that I was deserving of all of the hate in the world. And then it's funny because like I have friends now who will do things where it's definitely self-sabotage or definitely based out of some level of self-hatred. And it seems at first glance like this sort of, I don't know, like a, almost like a righteous thing to be so humble that you hate yourself. Like it feels like it sounds like humility. But then you're like, no, it's really not. Like you gotta get out of that situation because you're doing a disservice to people like your kids and that guy's situation.
Yeah. I know. And the great thing is like, I mean, and sometimes it's not enough to become aware of it, but like for someone like him, it was like enough to start becoming aware of it. And then the dickish behavior began to diminish.
Good.
But it's still, you know, it's that stuff you have to work through for many years. But funnily enough, sometimes just the awareness is useful. Like people who have outbursts of anger for no real reason or outbursts of tears for no real reason, you know, which can be, you know, dickish behavior, but actually there's a reason for it.
Do you think like in dickish behavior, there's a necessity for it to be somewhat manipulative because you're trying to like negatively affect the other person? Like it requires the other, like you were saying that to be a dick, you have to like, even if it's unconscious, you have a desire to like, you know, cause whatever. So you're inflicting something on somebody.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's an important distinction to make because, as I say, someone could have an outburst of anger because, you know, they had a terrible day at work and stuff like that. But it's not really designed to hurt the other person. It's an explosion of anger displaced. But dickish behavior, I think, is a behavior that is designed, unconsciously most of the time, designed to piss people off, designed to create conflict, designed to be destructive. So it's repetitive. You know, a one-off being a bit of an asshole is totally fine. Nobody thinks that's dickish behavior. It's when you've got that friend who does the same thing every single time.
Yeah. You know what's interesting too about that guy? I think there's two directions you can go when you like find out that you're doing something that is you know, rude or manipulative or dickish. It's, you can either be like, you can, well, I'm sure there's many things you can do, but like one is you go, oh, I just must be a bad person. I'm a dick. I'm a this, I am just inherently a dick. But it sounds like that guy was like, oh no, I'm not a dick. I'm just, I'm doing, something is going on within me. Yeah. And that I think is such a like weirdly important thing to be like, no, I still am not like a dick just because I acted like a dick. I'm acting dickish because I have internal things that are happening, which is a fun, that's fun.
Yeah.
And that makes it easier.
You kind of mentioned like another distinction, which is important, is there's people who, some of us who it's very hard to know when we're being like a dickish or being a bit of an asshole. And then some of us who feel it all too much.
Yeah.
Like every time you go to a party and you come home, you're like, I can't believe I said that. I can't believe I wore that. Or I can't believe I did what I did.
Yeah. I was out last night and I got back and I was like, I hope I didn't come off like a jerk the entire time. And it was, I caught myself having the thought and then I was like, oh, I'm sure it's fine. And I was like, even if I did, I'd know I wasn't being a jerk, but I definitely had that thing where I was like, oh my God, and that just becomes a like neurotic kind of like.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah. Cause I mean, it's kind of an obsessive, it potentially tends towards more not ever thinking that they're being a jerk, and a hysteric tends to be very concerned all the time about how they're coming off and what they're doing and what they're saying. But, you know, most of us are like somewhere in between. It's not, but
right,
some people,
but it's like a hysteric thing to think that.
Well, hysteric, it would be simply you're at such an extreme that it damages your life. Such an extreme that you don't want to go out, that you don't want to have a couple of drinks, that you're always, you know, it's basically when these things start to negatively affect your life or the life of people around you.
Right.
Otherwise, everybody feels, you know, most people feel occasionally like, oh, I acted a bit out of order.
Yeah.
But this does bring us to the mirror phase, actually, I think, because the mirror phase is a theory that basically in the first year of life, we are rubbish. Human beings are like, babies are rubbish. They can't stand up.
Oh, they're garbage creatures.
Yeah.
They can't do anything.
No strength. They can't run. They can't.
I think we should get rid of them.
Yeah. Yeah, because like horses, as when they're born, ponies or whatever you call them, baby horses, they can walk, I think, the day they're born.
Yeah.
Human beings, well, you'd know this because you're a zoologist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, human beings, some people say we're born preemptively, i.e. it takes so long before we can look after ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so the mirror phase is this interesting thing that's been observed where a kid feels rubbish and they can't do very much and they can't climb trees, they can't stand, they can't do whatever. But what they do is they create a mirror image, and it can be literally in the mirror where your parents hold you up. Like, have you ever seen people hold up their dogs or cats, put them in front of the mirror and say, that's you, right?
How do you spend your day?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course I hold everything
of course
front of
I do that.
Look at you.
Yeah. I noticed this once. I saw someone do this and this is fascinating because it's a very natural tendency, even to do it with an animal, but to do it with a kid, to hold them in front of a mirror and say, look at that, look there, that's you.
You know why I would do that when I have a baby, when I'm holding a baby? It's because if I'm holding the baby, first of all, I'm already kind of like, what do I do now? But then I go to a mirror because that way I can actually see the baby. Because you're holding a baby up close, it's like cute, or a puppy or whatever you're holding, like it's so close that it's hard to like get a look for it. But then you see the mirror and you're like, oh, there's the baby.
Yeah.
Well, maybe what I'm actually looking at is just me holding the baby.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to see the actual, yeah.
Like that Athena poster, you know, that famous, the half-dressed man holding the baby.
No.
It was very big in the 80s. It was like one of the kind of biggest kind of posters of the 80s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was really big.
And it's him in a mirror, or is it just
it's just him holding a baby, but thinking you might look in the mirror and see yourself in that kind of way.
Yes.
Yeah. So the mirror phase, the kid looks in the mirror, the mother or the father says, you know, look at you. And the idea is that the child creates this image of another person who is strong, who is able to walk, who's able to climb, who's in control of their body. Now, it might be their brother or sister. You know, your parents might go, look at your brother, look how great he is. But then what they do is they say, that's you, you're just like that, right? So the idea in the mirror phase is that you project out of your weakness a figure of strength. And then your parents have this really important role where they anchor that image back into you and say, that's you, you're big, you're strong. You know, if you hear kids or parents say to kids, like, you're strong, you're brave. They're not. Kids aren't brave. You know, a soldier's brave. If you graze your knee and cry, you're not brave. Mm-hmm. Like, a little girl is not a princess.
Yeah, you talk in extremes so that they can aspire to those, like, virtues or whatever.
So, yeah, well, you're creating, like, an ideal image, but you're saying that that kid is that. You're not saying the kid should be that. You're saying you are a princess, you are a soldier, you are
so fast. Is that a bad thing to do?
No, not at all.
Because I've heard that from parents, young parents, who are like, we're not going to tell our kid they're perfect, we're not going to tell our kid because that's not true. And but I'm like, okay, like, I don't know what the I don't know anything about parenting, so it's like, I don't know if that's the right.
Yeah, no, it's very natural. Like, I saw a kid the other day, and a friend had a baby, and, you know, the first thing out of your mouth is, oh, they're so beautiful, they're so, like,
and they are. It's true. Yeah, you're not lying when you say that, because it is stunning to see, like, a baby. You're like, oh my gosh, look at you.
But the thing is, you're not saying the child is so beautiful, you're saying you're so beautiful. It's like, what's natural for parents and adults is not even to say, oh, your child is so beautiful. Of course we say that, but we also say to the child, you are so beautiful, which is nothing, like, that's actually part of natural development. But here's the trick, because the idea is, and this is what selfies are, you know, selfies. We all know this. Obviously, a selfie is never for the self. It's always for others. When you take a selfie and put it on Instagram, it's not for yourself. And we laugh about that. We go, oh, people do a selfie of them climbing a mountain or eating good food. But it would be even weirder if you took selfies and you didn't share them. You just put them in a brochure or an album, and you sat down with a glass of
brochure. Port. Let's go brochure. Print them out on a nice glossy Kinko's brochure.
Yeah.
Trifold it.
Sit put down it in your chair. Yeah.
Here's my brochure.
But you don't even share it with anybody else. You just look through it yourself.
I'm just gonna sit down with my brochure.
That would be psychotic, right? So the idea is, like, what happens in Instagram is someone puts up a picture, which is their ideal image, which basically says, look at me, I'm fast or strong or beautiful or rich or whatever it is, whatever the ideal image of the other is. Then whenever people like the image, that is symbolic of people anchoring that image back into the person. So every time you get a like, it kind of basically says, that's you. So by the gaze of the other person looks at the picture of you, say, climbing a mountain, and then says, that is you. So each like re-anchors the ideal image back into the self. And that's kind of what the mirror phase is.
I was thinking about, and I don't know if this is related at all, but just in the social media world, I was like, you know, it's interesting. Like, I have I have an online audience and online following and all that, and it's not huge, but it's substantial, I would say. And then I realized, I was like, I don't ever post anything thinking about what anybody thinks, except for like two people, maybe two people, usually one person.
Yeah.
And it's that, I'm like, that's insane. Like, there's, I don't know how many Instagram followers I have. I think it's something like 92,417, but like, I'm just kidding. I don't know, but I think it's like 92,000. So like, I'm posting for an audience that is fairly large. And in my mind, when I'm editing it, there's one person that I'm thinking about, or two people, or I'm like a slight Rolodex. And I'm like, how crazy is it that it's all for those maybe handful of people.
That's totally. I mean, so much of say Instagram works like that is that although people are posting out to everybody, most people, what we're doing is, because we desire the desire of the ones we desire, which we covered in fantasy, but that's a perfect example of
which is called Macaulay Culkin and masturbation. If you're just listening, feel free to give it a listen. It's a good one.
So we delve into this, the we desire the desire of those we desire. So what you're doing is, in a sense, it's not that everybody liking the image does very much, like certain people, their like really, really works.
Right.
Really helps.
So crazy, man. It's such a weird kind of just it makes me think about how silly just we are as people, that like we have these big profiles and we spend all this time like doing it, and it's all for an imaginary person.
The funny thing is, but like things like Facebook are just derivative of a psychic structure. So we think that, you know, your Facebook profile is your idealized self, it's your Photoshop self, all the books that you pretend to have read, not the ones you really do read, 50 Shades of Grey or whatever. And it's all the pictures that make you look good.
First of all, just because it's on my in Tamil.
Yes, doesn't mean you're reading it. Yes, you've got all three. As yeah. <than that.
laughs> yeah. It's a classic trilogy.
But anyway, it's all the pictures that you know, make you look good, and you can de-tag the ones that make you not. But the idea is actually that's just a very good way of understanding our consciousness. It's not that Facebook is an idealized version of our consciousness. Our consciousness is an idealized version of our subjectivity.
Right.
So like, yeah, it's like I currently, and in this podcast, in a sense, I'm trying to project out a certain cleaned up image of myself.
Yeah.
You know, like I saw Pete Holmes did a very good joke where he was being interviewed. You saw this as well. And he said, like, you know, I'm being interviewed here, but this is not how I really am. Like, I don't sit like this. I don't wear pants.
Yep.
And it was very, very good, because it's like, oh yeah, in one sense, our consciousness, our daily life, we kind of like hide the messiness. So what we do on Instagram is just a derivative factor of our consciousness itself.
And would that be related to the mirror phase that we got when we were a little baby child?
That's it. So the mirror phase is this weird thing where we are actually two things. We are, in a sense, our chaotic desires and fears and all of that.
Elliot at 1 a.m.
Yep. Yeah. And then we are also this mirror image that helps to structure those desires and cover over some of the stuff that we'd like to hide from ourselves.
Fun.
Yeah, how Elliot does that in the afternoon.
I'm sorry?
Elliot in the afternoon.
Elliot at like 10:30 in the morning is a I mean, you've seen me eating salads.
I've seen you eating salads and going to the gym.
Yeah.
And
then at 9 p.m., I'm like...
Pizza.
I'm pizza, I'm drinking, and I'm having a good time doing whatever else. Yeah. And out at some bar. Yeah, it's a fun life. It's a nice life. But how does the... break it down again, how the mirror phase... So I get the social media thing and I get the mirror phase in and of itself, but when it comes to being a D-hole, where's the connection? Why, if I meet somebody and they're being an asshole, are they being an asshole because of their mirror phase?
No, I mean, it depends, whether they realize they're an asshole or not depends. So for example, a great example of mirror phase is, even if someone dresses up on a Friday night, say you're going to a party and you dress up and you look really good, but then you catch yourself in the mirror, you may be nervous about going to the party. You might be anxious about whether anyone will talk to you, or whether you're cool enough or whatever. But then if you look at yourself in the mirror, you're like, that person looks like they've got it all under control. That's why a lot of people go to the bathroom a lot, not to go to the toilet, but to actually look at themselves in the mirror, not in any narcissistic way, just more in a sense of, inside I feel chaotic and anxious, but that person...
Remind me that I look like a person.
Yes, yeah.
Remind me that I'm a human being, please, mirror.
Yeah, that I look like I've got this.
Yeah.
But then here's the funny thing, it's called symbolic castration. It's when you feel the disconnect. So for example, you're out and people are talking to you, but you can make up a name and make up a profession, because in a sense you're like, they're not really relating to me. They're relating to my mirror image. So sometimes the more successful you are as a person, the more disconnected from yourself you can be, because your success is your kind of ideal image. And your anxieties are kind of like your daily chaos.
Wow, good stuff, yeah. Good stuff.
So that's why a lot of people feel like imposters. You know, if you talk to someone who's like an academic and they go like, I don't feel like an academic, I feel like I'm an imposter.
Yeah.
It's because they're feeling the gap between their ideal image and their own anxieties and fears, which is very healthy.
Well, that explains a lot.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
What do you do with... because I've had this before, do you think that there is a right way? I don't know where to begin with this, I guess. I've had experiences where I have felt like either I am perceived as I think people have perceived me as being a dick in some area, and I will double down on that idea in some way, even if it's like it can be as benign as like, I get this impression, which, by the way, I mean, I totally get, like, if I get the impression that somebody thinks somebody, it's obviously me like maybe they don't, but I can get that impression and I can react accordingly and then just sort of exit that situation, whether it's a conversation or whether it's a relationship, whether it's anything like that. And I'll just have this thing where I'm like, oh, that person has a bad image of me. Mm-hmm. And then I react accordingly and I exit the scenario. And then later I'm like, well, that just proved, I'm like, maybe that proved their point because they thought I was a dick. And then I just never, I don't talk to them anymore. Yeah. And so it's like, then I am the dick. If that's, if you define that as dickish behavior, which I wouldn't, but like, I don't know. It's something, it's a weird world.
I mean that like we should do love sometime because there's some good stuff we could talk about there, but what you're describing, which is where love often begins, let's maybe not even use the word love, but desire, is where we're seeking someone who upholds our idealized image of ourselves. So what say on Tinder, you put an idealized image of yourself, maybe in your description, which is says shows that you're funny or shows that you're wealthy or shows that you,
or that like, you don't care about Tinder. That's a fun one.
That's a big one. Yeah, absolutely. So we give this idealized image, and then what we initially respond to is someone who likes our idealized image and will play up to it and will kind of like in one sense reflect it back to us, anchor that ideal image back into ourselves. There's nothing wrong with that, although I don't think a relationship is deep and lasting until you can get beyond that, what's called the imaginary phase, beyond that phase where we only go out with people insofar as they prop up the idealized image we have of ourselves. Not that I'm saying you are doing that.
Sure, yeah.
But I think we all do it to a certain extent. Of course, you want someone who looks at you in a favorable light. But often a relationship gets really deep when the person is able to also see beyond your idealized image.
Which I think is deep down what we all want, because we all want to be known like so fully, you know, in every way. I was, that reminded me of like the thing where it's like, I know that I want everyone to like me, but I also know, because it's like I do comedy and I have that like desire, like I want the, you know, adoration of people. And not that that's a good thing in any way, because clearly it's not, but like I also know that who I am as an actual individual, who I truly am, not ideal, but like my actual self, is obviously not compatible with the world at large. And so it's like it goes back to the same thing, a recurring theme in what we talk about, where it's just like living in the tension of like, okay, I know that I want people to like me, and I know that like I can't get down on myself for wanting people to like me, because the moment I do that, I end up being like, I don't care what you think. And it's like, obviously, you know, I care what people think.
Yeah.
But I also have to know that there's no way that people aren't going to be like, oh, you're a piece of crap sometimes. And so it's like a fun, it's a difficult tension to exist in. Yeah.
And you don't want too many people to have that. That's why you can't have the world, you know, having those judgments. It's a few people. But this is why so LA parties are so shallow and painful. It's because in an LA party, and probably any kind of social party, you are all projecting your ideal image. So you're all projecting your mirror image. That's what happens in a party. And because you're doing that basically exclusively, you can never get to really know somebody.
Do you mean you're projecting your mirror images and you're walking around like, I do this, I'm that?
Yeah, I'm good. And it's totally fine, but it's like you're putting your best foot forward, as they say. It's like your Sunday best. You're wearing your Sunday best. And that's all great. There's nothing wrong. But that's why often you come home from a party like that and you feel either never not understood or lonely, or you feel like you haven't connected with anybody.
Right.
Because in one sense, it's when you get into this middle space. Because I, by the way, I wouldn't say that your real self is your kind of edge, your kind of, you know, the anxiety-ridden self either. I would say, and there's a beautiful book by Adam Phillips called In Praise of an Unlived Life. I think it's called that.
So a buddy of mine mentioned we should come up with a book list, because we mention
books
sometimes. Yeah, and I've had a number of people reach out and be like, what books do you recommend? I'm like, I don't, but then talk about that. So what was the name of that?
Oh yeah, so it's by Adam Phillips, who, I mean, all his work is brilliant, but he has a book that came out recently called, I think it was called In Praise of the Unlived Life, where he says that, you know, we are the in-between. We are the in-between of our idealized selves and our anxieties and fears. Like, It's not that that's the truer self. It's like we inhabit the in-between.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so anxiety-producing that we either go to one extreme or the other. And this is where the mirror phase goes wrong, right? Because if you over-identify with the mirror phase, that's kind of hedonism. It's obviously narcissism, because, you know, narcissist looks in the mirror image in the water, falls in love with his own image. So that's what narcissism is, in a sense. It's over-identification with your idealized self, which, by the way, hidden under that is usually deep self-loathing, self-hatred. But there, the other side of the coin is, if you haven't been able to anchor your idealized image back into yourself at all, then you'll tend to idealize stars, celebrities, authority figures to your own detriment. So you see both of those. You see kind of the person who over-identifies with their idealized image, they think they're brilliant, or at least, you know, on the surface. And then others who think they're terrible and awful and weak, but are always seeing someone else as strong and brilliant and beautiful.
Dang, this is good stuff, man.
Is that right?
That was great. Because I'm like, I love the game of like, I do that. Yeah. And then it's like, everything's like, I do that too. And it's like, you know, the narcissist sees his image and likes it. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can fall into that. And then you're like, but under that is like deep self-loathing. I'm like,
check.
Yep. You're like the loves stars and stuff. I'm like, no, that's not me. That means I'm the other thing, which means I'm this. Okay, great. Cool.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's depressing. So if you would like to support the Fundamentalists podcast, you can go to trywink.com/thefundamentalists, or get this, Pete, you can go to also trywink.com/fundamentalists.
Oh, you got it fixed because
both of them work now. Because I was like, I emailed the guys at Wink and I was like, hey, I'm very dumb. Can you just put both of them? But anyway, you get $25 off and they send you amazing wine and you can do a little quiz that will tell you exactly what kind of wine you like based on other stuff that you like, and they ship it to your door and it comes in really cool bottles and it comes in really cool boxes and it tastes really, really good.
So basically, it's a wine club. You answer a few questions. I'm looking. You're nodding. That's good. Answer a few questions, and then they will send you hopefully beautiful wine on a regular basis.
You can choose it, yeah, and they suggest
that
it.
You can
great.
Drink or bring to parties. That's a big thing for me. Actually, I like wine bottles around so that when I'm going to a party, I don't have to stop off somewhere to buy wine.
You did that like a week ago. Right.
Well, I brought a liqueur that was stuck in the back of the freezer.
Did you find out what it was? What did they say? What?
A lemon liqueur or something. I'm not sure, but I brought it around and.
Did you try it? Did you taste any of it?
No, yeah, we ended up drinking it. I just offloaded it with them.
So. It's just going to sit in their freezer forever.
And then they will pass it on to somebody else.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's Jumanji.
An empty exchange. That's an interesting thing because, you know, the way there's empty exchanges it's all about, like, if you say to someone, if someone says, I'm sorry, and then the other person says, oh, you didn't need to say that. Well, they did so that you could say that you didn't need to say it. Yeah. So it's an empty thing. I saw there was a poster. What was it? See if I can remember this. But it was like two people were on the bill for like a comedy show or something. And I think this was in a film. And one of them said to the other, listen, I put your name in big letters above mine. You know, felt it was the right thing to do. And the other person says, oh, you didn't need to do that. And he said, listen, I knew you would say that, so I swapped it around.
That's great.
So it's like, you know, sometimes like the gift of the wine is literally an empty gift that's designed to just connect people.
Great.
Yeah, because I was thinking, is it language is the same? Because it was at their house, we were chatting intently about something. And then I had one of those moments where you go, what were we just talking about?
Oh, because you were in the moment.
In the moment, but then I was going to make a point and then I forgot completely, and so did they. All of us forgot completely what we were talking about.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, but then it reminds you that basically what you're doing with communication is saying, I'm here and you're here, and I'm here and you're here, and I can see you and you can see me. And that's why whenever you're communicating with an infant, it's like pure discourse, because really what you're communicating is presence all the time.
Right.
So all the content, even people listen to the Fundamentalists, like the content might all just be forgotten, but hopefully for an hour, it's like, oh, you know, I felt like I was communicating, well, vicariously.
Sure.
For an hour with us on our sofa.
You're on fire today.
Oh, wow. I hope this is recording then.
We should check. Yeah, we're still recording. That's great. Okay, so what else do we have? We've covered being a dick. We've covered reacting to people thinking that you're a dick, which is to say don't, and who cares, and there's nothing you can do that's right ever. And what do you find? Have you done, let's just to take it a little bit more surface level, because that's my job in this, and that's what people want from you, is they
let's
want
keep it
surface
shallow.
level shallowness. What is can you give an anecdote or just a story? Can you think of a time when like someone was dickish to you, or that you were dickish to somebody else, and you like just a fun like there's no real moral of it, but like is there like a fun kind of just like that person sucks.
Oh, I'm trying to.
Do you want to vent about any dicks? I was thinking about.
You have a thought about
this? No, I just going to throw something. I'm not going to like be like, well, because I do. But like I was thinking the other day. I was like, what if you just forgave everybody? Like if you just all the dicks. Because I was thinking about this one person who I don't have a good affinity for, and I was like, what if I was like, all right, and I was like. Great. I was like, you're forgiven everything you did. You're an idiot and whatever. And you'll probably continue to be an idiot and that's okay. But I'm not going to like harbor any ill will toward your idiocy. And I was like, that's a very kind of like Sunday school thing to be like, forgiveness is a great thing. But dicks are hard to forgive because they're dickish. And so do you have anyone that you're just like, oh, I kind of do. Do you harbor anything toward the dicks of the world that maybe you shouldn't be?
No, some of my closest friends are total dicks.
Great.
And they would say the same about me.
I'm right here.
I have, just as an example, this is a funny example, but there was a Twitter account that was set up that was designed to mock me incessantly.
This was before we knew each other, and that's I thought it was hilarious.
It was very hilarious. Now, it's a very Northern Irish thing, because it turned out it was all my mates from Belfast, you know? So they were being total dicks for 2 years, systematically mocking me to an inch of my life.
Just for context, are your friends in Northern Ireland, are they like... Are they in the world that you're in? Like,
no.
Are they in the religious?
No,
like,
not at all.
Pyro. Okay.
Not at all. So they find it hilarious. They find it like, hilarious.
You know, he does all these talks. We're gonna make an account that just trashes him all the time. I think that is unbelievable.
Yeah,
funny.
That's a very Northern Irish thing to do. It was very beautiful. So some of my friends, like myself, sometimes they have behaviors that can be difficult. But they're close enough friends that you are able to understand them. And that's my big thing, right? This isn't always true, but very often, the way someone makes you feel is often a way that of them communicating how they feel about themselves. So if someone's always really boring, and you find every time you're around them, you're bored out of your mind, sometimes it's because they think they're boring, not consciously, but unconsciously, or they want
maybe
you to
they
be
just
bored.
Know.
What's that?
Maybe they just know they're boring people.
Yeah, but you know, but being boring is it's like an art form. So sometimes
some people are freaking Picassos out there, man.
Yeah, but once you start to understand it, like I have a friend who is very self-destructive behavior. He's incredibly fun to be around, but you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, it gets messy sometimes.
Yeah,
but then I understand that. That even the tension that he can create at times is reflective of his own inner world and what he's struggling with. So it's not even forgiving. That forgiveness isn't almost the word for it. It's like understanding that my friend or I, because I do this as well, that I am struggling with something,
right.
And I've got people around me who are close enough to me to allow me to be abusive. Because all true friendships are abusive to some extent.
Yeah, you always kind of end up leaning into and you know, I think invading is the right word. There's a little bit of like a little punchiness that can happen at times with like a good friendship.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a you know, I mean, we've talked about this before where it's like you can gauge certain things by, I think, just like looking at a relationship and going like, do I feel comfortable making fun of this person? And sometimes it takes a group of people to be able to like kind of poke fun around each other and beat around the bush, because it's hard to do directly one-on-one. But the ability to make fun of your friends or not, I mean, that's not exactly what you mean, but yeah, I know.
Yeah. You. Totally.
And
on that, there was something that you said that reminded me. So if people are acting in a aggressive way or something like that. What was I going to say? Oh, I think it's gone.
You were just so in the moment.
Yes.
Just now. You were like, I'm here and we're communicating.
I know, damn, but it was good. What I wanted to say. What was it? It'll come back to me.
I don't know. Yeah, but the friendship thing and having somebody that you can be a jerk around is, I think, a very important thing because
absolutely. And the thing I was going to say was about the abusive thing. It's going to like that. There's not a simple thing of a relationship is abusive or not. It's like it's the difficult thing of going, when is a relationship abusive enough that you have to leave? Like you've got friends who maybe mistreat you so much you have to back away, but all of us to a certain extent will, like, for example, if someone has a boss that's really nasty and they can't shout at their boss or they'll get fired, so they come home and they shout at their partner. Now that's abusive, like that's nasty, the partner didn't do anything wrong. Or if you've got a child, you can't shout at your child because they're just an infant, but you're maybe woke up four times in the night, so you shout at your partner.
Yeah, you're grumpy.
You're grumpy. And what's that? That's displacement, because you can't put the anger in the location it should be in, so you displace it to somewhere else. Now, in a good relationship, your friend or your partner can go, oh, I understand why you're doing that. And at the right moment, not generally right there and then, but maybe the next day, can go, listen, you were really angry, but I think you were just angry at your boss.
Yeah.
And so that's what, like, we're all a bit asshole-y at times. We're all dickish. But often, if we've got good friendships, we've got people who'll give us grace. And then very, very subtly, when it's the right moment, point it out.
Yeah.
Not like to get you, but to go like,
that's
oh.
And that's where the actual depth part of the relationship happens, where somebody's like, hey, is everything?
Yeah.
Because like yesterday, I know you kind of whatever, but like you're being a little bit of a jerk and like, so maybe you're understanding. And that's, and that's when you can be like, yeah, it was because I did that.
Because the two extremes, like, so obviously there's the one extreme of there's too much anger, abuse, physical abuse, whatever. Like that's the extreme you leave. The weird thing
is,
there's the other extreme. You can have a relationship where there is no tension, but what you find out is that the two people don't think that the bridge of their relationship can take the freight of any argument whatsoever. So the person's like, oh, if I say I'm angry, they're going to leave me. And so that itself is incredibly destructive. Relationships where you have to always hide your anger or frustrations in fear that as soon as you say something's wrong, the person will walk out on you. So what you want in a healthy relationship is, in a sense, the ability to be a bit of a dick, and in a way where there's grace and also an ability to kind of reflect on that.
Yeah, something where I know I have friends where it's like if I make fun of them or something, there's just, even if it's not something that the bridge breaks, it definitely wobbles a lot. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh no, I need to know that I can.
Yeah.
I have a very teasing family, and not my mom so much, because she's sort of just this loving, wise person, but then like my brother and my dad, we will sister-in-laws and girlfriends, wives, we'll poke fun at each other a lot, and it can be kind of like, it can get kind of rough at times, or kind of just like, why do you talk that way? I mean, especially like me and my brother and all, like that kind of relationship, you can just like go for it, and because of that, because you know that bond is so strong, and it's like, that's such a nice thing. And it's such a counterintuitive thing, because like the dickishness thing is something where you're like, oh, I never want to be a dick. But you're like, imagine not being able to be a dick with your friends. That's the worst thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's always that point in a new friendship where you have to take the risk of saying something funny at their expense.
Yeah.
And it's always a risk, because the person might just go, like, what the hell are you doing? Or they might laugh. Now, if they say, what the hell are you doing? That tells you that friendship is not at the place where you can be really close.
I think, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, but like you go into any bar, like in Belfast, like you know you're friends with people when you can say the most terrible things to each other.
Yeah. So we, the Valley folk, we're pretty tight. And I'm going to show you this photo. And we're going to explain what it is on...
I wanted to video this and give it to my patrons.
I know. I was going to suggest that next week. We'll do it next week, which is patreon.com/PeterRollins.
Yep.
See that? And not to be confused with patreon.com/TheValleyFolk.
Valley Folk, because they're spelled very similar.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going through... We're doing this business meeting on Sunday, which is the day this gets uploaded, and we're coming up with a time to go to an office space, and it's all a very technical conversation, very like cut and dry. And my good friend Steve Zaragoza, Esteban Zaragoza, says
he's very funny.
He's unbelievable.
He's very funny.
He's unbelievably funny.
He is one of the gifts that you have given me.
He tickles me. Like I don't know how else to describe it. Like he just. he can think of, I don't know, I can sing his praises for a very long time. He's also a wonderful person, but he can be, he'll do things in the text thread just to be like kind of dickish to everybody. And so he, and this is more of a prank than being dickish, but he goes, hey, we're down at, you know, meet at 9 at the, you know, such and such office, just hammering out the details now. And it's like, he's sending these texts, you know, one by one. And then he just sends this photo.
Oh my God. I hope that's not his foot.
No, it's not.
No,
but
no,
isn't that revolting?
That is revolting.
And then just read the text after his that Lee sent. So that he got an FU for that. Basically, it's a photo of a gross foot. And that's all I'll say. But it's one of the most disgusting photos I've ever seen. But it was like him. Imagine a professional scenario where you could like send that photo,
yeah,
and everyone is just like, F you, I hate you, delete, yeah, blah, 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 and like gets a little angry, but then is also just like, well, of course you're going to do that. And that's the point of all of this. It's nice.
Well, that's why a lot of people, you know, myself included, but like a little bit of a few drinks or something equivalent, or like a crazy experience or bungee jump is required, because that gets us to the point where we can do that kind of stuff for comedians, and for like, that's your job, and comedians are very good at being able to do that naturally. But for most of us, we are pretty uptight. We have our ideal images. We have to, for work, we have to put up certain appearances. So we need spaces in our lives where we can, you know, have a few drinks and kind of like pretend we're not responsible. That's always a good excuse in Vino Veritas, you know, in Wine or Truth, that you can say
in
something.
In vino veritas?
Yeah.
Wow,
vino
cool.
Veritas, yeah. So it's a beautiful little phrase, but it's, you know, it's true. You know, you drink a lot and then you might say something that you would otherwise repress.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But what that allows is it allows for you to potentially have the possibility of a friendship. Because at that moment, yeah, either the person will show no interest or they'll laugh and you'll have a bit of back and forth and then a real friendship will grow.
Yeah.
And that's the risk. That's the whole thing about in the mirror phase. If you too identify with your ideal self, you don't let the imaginary image down. Or if you are not connected to your ideal image and you are always seeing how terrible you are, you won't ever go out. You will be too scared to take the risk. There's the difficulty of going out to a party and taking the risk and showing someone that you're not, you know, as perfect as you present yourself.
And then thereby actually show them your real self and receive validation for who you truly are. It's like I struggle with that with like even this podcast where we sit down in our, you know, living room, and it couldn't be a more comfortable environment. And it's like, we have a drink, we chat, that's the whole idea of it. But then it's also like, I literally forget that like people don't know me and then they hear me. And then it's the same thing with YouTube and it's the same thing with social media. I'll say stuff where it's just like, I did a Louis C.K. joke that almost destroyed my whole existence and probably shouldn't even mention it. I deleted it since then. But like, it was one of those things where I forget that like I'm not living in a vacuum. And I forget that those moments that you have where you're drinking wine and you're at a, you know, pub, those like nice intimate moments are, they have that place because maybe sometimes they should be more intimate. And I tend to, because just of my existence, it's weirdly blurred and that can sometimes get me in trouble. But I would rather get in trouble for the blur than keep everything so staunchly separated.
Well, see, I call this the Irish safe space, right? Because I know when I moved to America, there's an idea of safe space, which is a place where you will be protected from being offended.
Yeah.
But an Irish safe space is where you go to be offended. So the pub is an Irish safe space, which is you're safe to go. You're safe for a weird reason that it's equal opportunities offense. Everybody's going to be offended, so nobody feels offended.
Yep.
And I think both are important. It's good to have spaces where you can, you know, not have people attacking you and saying terrible things about you. But actually, weirdly, and you don't hear this so much, is in society, we have these important spaces where you can have that. And they're often called families, but also pubs.
Yeah.
And this where you can go and you can actually, you know, share things that are like where people offend you. And like in Northern Ireland, it's the Catholic Protestant thing. So, you know, sectarianism, but you know, you're a true friend with a Catholic. If you're a Protestant, if you can make the jokes that you would make against Catholics or the Catholic makes the jokes to you about being a Protestant. So that's the Irish safe space. And it's as important as the American safe space.
anything else you wanna hit before we wrap this up?
I feel like, you know, that was a kind of interesting little conversation about
stuff.
So I just wanted to, now, are we ready for a bit of a takeaway?
I think so. What do you got? What do you got for me?
What have I got as a takeaway?
Let's take a moment and just have 10 minutes of dead air while we think of something.
Yeah. I did see a funny thing on Dead Air, by the way. We're talking about Steve Zaragoza. He did a video where he said, he answering the question, why do I paint my nails?
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah, it's and very it's just good. Him staring at the camera.
Yeah, but he says, because I want to, and then 10 minutes of just blank.
Yep.
Yeah. Very funny.
Yep. Yeah. He's a smart one.
But I guess, you know, for me, the takeaway on this episode, there's a few, actually. I mean, I do love that idea of the Irish safe space where you can be, you know, nasty to each other and go, like, that's important. Like, the difficult thing in a relationship is working out, you know, when is the kind of, when is the abuse healthy and good, as in, you know, because we all are can be a bit dickish, and when does it get too much? But I guess the takeaway would be for people who are listening to this to maybe go, oh, right, do I tend towards hiding my symptoms and my kind of anger or my emotional stuff, whatever, hiding it, pretending it doesn't exist, so create this ideal image, like my like I try to live an Instagram life, and because that's destructive to you, or do I more tend towards idealizing other people, thinking everyone else is great, and always condemning myself, always thinking right. I'm an asshole. And, you know, kind of like identify which one you maybe tend towards, and kind of realize that the truth is neither. The truth is that you live in between. The truth is the in-between. You're not your idealized image, and you're not your pure id, crazy emotions, whatever.
I was going to say, I think this to echo that in a less eloquent way, I would say the same thing, where it's like, I get so in my head about, like, am I being my authentic self right now? And then it's like, when you do that, you're still not being your authentic self, because you're still just like, for, you know, you're given, I guess I'm not going to give myself a hard time if I post a photo and I know that I'm really hunting for like 2-3 likes out of however many. Like I don't think that it's beneficial. I think it's healthy to know it, but I don't think it's necessarily healthy to always be like obsessed with the fact that we are putting out images all the time, because there's nothing you can do to stop it. Yeah. And it's like,
there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. There's nothing right or wrong with it. What the problem is, if you over identify with it, which is basically pretending you're not castrated, is the psychoanalytic term for it. Or you just look at everybody else's Instagram photos and you feel absolutely shit about your own life.
I feel like I pretend I'm castrated pretty regularly.
Oh yeah. Literally and figuratively.
Literally, yeah. cool. I don't know exactly what the castrating thing means, but I love all that. What, explain it one more time.
Oh yeah, castration. Yeah, I've used the phrase and I didn't really explain it. I mean, it simply kind of means...
And then you just give the most medical, literal definition. So how do I break this down? It's when you're held down.
Peter Abelard was castrated, sadly.
Oh.
Because he was in love with Eloise. It's a beautiful love story.
It doesn't sound like it.
it ended tragically. But castration is, in a sense, and the idea is we're all castrated symbolically, which means none of us are our ideal selves.
That's what I thought.
And it's kind of like, and so symbolic castration is this weird thing where you realize that your symbolic image, the image of you, say, as a great musician or a great host or a great writer, realizing that weirdly I don't identify with that image. I know it's me. I've seen my CV and I look at it, but it doesn't feel like me. That's kind of symbolic castration. You're realizing that you know, you're not this perfect, whole, complete being, and that's okay.
I love it. I think that's great. Cool. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. To support the podcast, you can go to trytrade.com/. This is also, I'm going to try not to be a dick.
Nice.
Thanks.